Okay, we call this meeting to order, Stanislaus County Employees Retirement Association. Please call the roll.
Maria DeAnda. Darren Garrett.
Here.
Ron Martin.
Here.
Jim DeMartini.
Here.
Jeff Grover. Michael O'Neill.
Here.
Jigen Raja.
Here.
Mike Lynch.
Here.
Donna Riley.
Here.
Jonathan Denon.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Good morning. Are there any announcements? I have none. Okay, public comment. I have one request to speak. Rhonda Biesmeyer. Do you want to speak in public comment or a specific item?
I'll wait a little bit for that item.
Which item? Oh, I see. You want to speak on 6A. Didn't notice that. Okay, then we will now move to the consent agenda. Anybody on the board wish to pull an item from the consent agenda? Seeing none, entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
A motion is made and seconded that we approve the consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, motion is carried. Okay, Executive Director 6A. Now this is where, when did you want to speak, the beginning or the end? Or?
Probably sometime at the end, because I want to hear the discussion first.
Okay. All right.
All right. So the reason we're bringing this forth to you is that we're required every 2 years to relook at the excess earnings policy and recommend any revisions that we think would enhance the policy. Last time it was done was May 25th, 2010, so we're just a little bit behind. This is a first draft. Our intention is to get some input from you, make any changes that you would like to see done, and then bring a final draft back to you on the 11th of July. And then in the meantime, we would inform RESCO of the intent to change this policy that's required through Government Section Code 31592.5. The only really significant change we're asking from you is to essentially put the policy on autopilot when the funded ratio is below 90%. We'll get to this in a little more detail as we go through the agenda item. That's really the only thing that's of any significance. We're not requesting any changes to how the excess earnings can be used. All of that remains pretty much the same. We're not changing anything there. So what I'd like to do is, since there's five parts to this agenda item, I'd like to go through them one at a time, get your thoughts one at a time as we go through there, and get discussion going. And if you want to change things, if you like it the way it is, then we'll take note of it, and then we'll have one vote at the end here. So the first thing we're asking is to reaffirm the intent to maintain this non-valuation contingency reserve. In 2006, I believe it was, the county and Stan Sarah entered into an agreement which expired June 30th, 2011. And Stan Sarah's part of that agreement was to maintain a 2% contingency reserve over this period of time. On June 30th, 2011, again, that agreement expired. And at that point in time, we were coming off the heels of a 22% investment return. And after staff paid off all the past losses, there was still $54 million left to allocate. And none of that went into the contingency reserve, so it remained the same from June 30th, 2010, where it was maintained at the 2% level. But then June 30th, 2011 came around, the contract expired, and nothing was done to it. The 22% return left that reserve a little bit less than 2%. So what we're asking you here today is to reaffirm the 2% if you want to keep it at that or pick some other level. And just to give you an idea, if you do pick 2% or anything greater than 1.7, because the reserve as it sits right now is about 1.7% of the assets, so if you choose anything above that amount, in June of this year, we're going to transfer something from the valuation reserves into this non-valuation contingency reserve, and it's going to cause the employer rate for 13-14 to be slightly higher. We estimate that if you do choose 2%, that it'll increase the employer rate in 13-14 by about 15 one-hundredths of a percentage point. So we'd like to start with that one.
When Does that equate to dollars-wise?
So every 1% would be about $2.2 million. So you're probably looking at about $400,000. Yeah.
That's if we went to 2% from 1.7?
Right. Well, yeah. It's just that it happens to be 1.7 now.
That'll be a part of the discussion.
But it was 3.
It was three in 2006, three, right. That's correct. And then they transferred about $12.5 million, and that took it down to 2%, and then Stan Serra agreed to keep it or maintain it at 2% for 5 years.
Well, from your description, it seems like there are pluses and minuses no matter which direction you go in.
In terms of the employer contribution rate?
Yeah.
Well, actually, if you decided to go down to 1%, you'd save the rate would be about 0.25% lower if you decided to move it down to 1%, because then we would transfer assets from that non-val reserve and put it into a valuation reserve. And if you do want to keep this, you don't have to. The law didn't say you have to keep any reserve whatsoever. But if you do want to keep it, the law does say that if you want to use any money from it to pay for benefits other than retirement benefits, that fund has to be at least 1%. Law does state that, but you don't have to do anything.
So 1% is a minimum.
Right.
So if, we would need more than that if we were going to spend something and then
if you
have a minimum.
If you want to spend something on something other than retirement benefits and you choose 1%, then any assets in excess of that 1% could be used for that.
What are some of the things that we might consider spending that money on?
Well, the current excess earnings policy says you could spend it on ad hoc COLAs or just ad hoc retiree benefits or healthcare subsidies, premium subsidies. It's the only three that I see in the current policy. And the law is not extremely specific on what you can spend it on.
Except retirees.
Pretty much. But it does talk about ad hoc COLAs and healthcare premiums.
So is there a good reason not to establish it at 1% with the idea of then we would never have the risk of spending it on something we hadn't planned on unless we planned for it.
That's right.
We would have to set aside in the future for more than the 1%.
That's right. The only thing it says is that if you have a reserve of 1% and you declare excess earnings after that point in time, then those excess earnings can be used to pay for ad hoc benefits. But if you set it at 2%, then I think that you're going to need at least 2% in there, and then excess earnings beyond that point could be used.
But when that reserve gets built up and the county's having trouble, then they ask for it.
That's right. Essentially, the way I look at the law is that this board has full discretion over those assets regardless.
All right. My main question is, why now? It's been expired for over a year. What's the rush?
Well, I want to know what you want to do. I mean, the policy is antiquated right now. So
okay, but it was antiquated.
You can say no. We can say let's turn the switch off and say no contingency reserve. And on June 30th, we'll move $23.8 million from this contingency reserve back into a valuation reserve. We can do that and get rid of the whole concept. You don't have to do it. The law didn't say you got to do it.
But without the reserve, the other money we have, we don't have a lot of discretionary latitude.
That's correct.
So this gives us some latitude on what we can spend money on.
Yes.
Otherwise, we're hamstrung. We got.
That's correct. There's two other significant non-val reserves, and that's the legal contingency reserve, which I would not recommend moving any money out of. And the other one is the death benefit subsidy, which I don't even know what you can do with that, but there's not that much anyway, and it's there to pay a retiree death benefit. So I wouldn't recommend touching that either.
That's that $5,000.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, Rhonda, you want to speak now?
Yes, I'm Rhonda Biesmeyer, the president of RESCO. I have a big concern about first of all, that the prior excess earnings policy wasn't met as far as the 2%, and I want to ask the board if there's any binding requirement that the board bring that contingency up to the full 2% rather than the 1.7. And also, I would like to state that RESCO's position on this is that we definitely would want to maintain the 2% contingency reserve, and we'd like to put that forth as a recommendation from RESCA.
And I'd just like to follow up on what Joan was saying. In the past, the county has benefited from having this contingency reserve.
Even
as they took, but they shared money out of these reserves, didn't they?
That's correct. I think three times since 2006.
So it's been beneficial to the county that we've kind of had this enforced savings account, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm.
Rick, do you have a recommendation?
See, my problem with all this, maybe stupid, but this is it. When things are going great, there's a reserve, and so the county doesn't make a contribution, or the systems.
That don't make can't it. Happen anymore. You realize that because two years ago they changed this policy. The county is required to at least pay the normal cost portion, regardless of the funded status of the plan. So that's not going to happen again.
Okay, so that can happen.
Right.
Okay. So the county, the systems all have to contribute no matter what.
All 37 ACT systems?
No, the county series and the districts.
Yes.
Okay.
Any further discussion?
Stan? Stan Reisman with the Chief Executive Office for the county. And maybe I wanted to share just a couple thoughts with you. First of all, I don't know that we feel very passionately one way or another about this. I think our larger concern is there is a whole series of decisions you can be asked to make over the course of the next year or so. And I think we're more concerned about the combined effect of all those decisions. So you're going to be visiting discount rate discussions. You're going to be visiting discussions about GASB recommendations regarding final decrement and some other things. And so any individual one of these, I think we probably have the capacity, or we'll create the capacity to absorb. I think our concern is more the combined effect of it. If you're doing this in the vacuum, and then you come in and you look at the discount rate in the vacuum, and then you look at the GASB, and each of those may seem tolerable in and of themselves, but when you wrap them all together, suddenly, maybe we're looking at a full 2% change or something like that. I think that's our broader concern. I will share also with you that may ask you just to consider what is the purpose of the contingency reserve, and what is it that you're hoping to accomplish. I can tell you, probably 9-10 years ago, this reserve dropped to 1% level for a number of years. So it's not uncommon that it's been at 1% in the past. It's really kind of been all over, from 1% to 3% to 2%. I think it's probably, from our perspective, more of decisions. What's the purpose of these funds? What is it that you envision that you could possibly even need it for?
Well, I think that from a historical perspective, I mean, yeah, Stan is correct, but it's also been as high as 10%.
Oh, has it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been that high prior to me coming on the board, but it has been that high. The death benefit is an ad hoc benefit, correct, Rick?
That's right.
And the death benefit, as a side note, I think we're all in agreement from the discussions we've had with the county that is a vested benefit from the county's perspective. Mm-hmm. So I think if we're going to have discussions here, we need to maintain at least, per the statute, we need to maintain at least a 1% contingency reserve. I just throw that out so people understand the past and where we're at, what discussions we've had. So
I was under the impression that the death benefit had been changed to a vested benefit.
I believe that's correct.
That's what I thought, too.
Yes.
Maybe sometime we can check that out.
It's not an ad hoc benefit anymore. It's invested,
right.
So it goes in a different category.
That's
so there are no ad hoc
reserve
benefits.
I don't think there is. I don't think there's any money other than what's in the contingency reserve that's at your discretion. I mean, I'd like to ask Fred for sure, but I have a feeling that there's nothing there. Because the other thing is the legal contingency reserve. which again, you may have some discretion over, but I don't think I would advise it at this time to touch it.
So what's the issue here? Whether we leave it at one or go to two?
What do you want to set that contingency reserve to going forward, or at least another 2 years?
By law, we have to have one, correct?
You do not have to have one.
If we have one, it has to be at least
1%. At least one, right.
We don't have to have one.
Well, where are the funds? My last looking at the death benefit was under the category of ad hoc benefits. That's not correct?
I don't think so anymore, no. Again, I would feel more comfortable if Fred would weigh on this later on, but the way I read it, no, that it's a vested benefit now. Again,
you know, Mike?
There's not that much money in there.
Just like 5 or 6 million.
Yeah, it's not a whole lot.
Well, I'm not... The amount is not the issue. It's where it's classified.
To me,
what is it labeled as per the statute? And so, if we need an opinion from counsel before we move forward,
I guess I'd ask you: is this something that you this a path you really want to go down? Talking about taking money from that reserve, is that something we
no,
want
no,
to
no,
do?
No, no,
oh, okay.
I'm not taking money from it. I'm trying to, you know, we're all talking here what we're going to do with this contingency reserve.
Okay.
And I just want to make sure that you know, we're all on the same sheet here when we understand, you know, with respect to the death benefit. If it's coming out of and is classified as an ad hoc benefit, then, you know, kind of back to Stan's point, the discussion at this point is kind of moot because we're operating in a cloud.
Mm-hmm. Every year I do know that reserve is trued up based on the actuary's analysis of the present value of that death benefit and how much money is in there. And the last year they did it, I noticed that the change wasn't much. So it's maintained around that $5 million mark all the time, so it's fully funded.
And that's a separate silo of money?
Yes.
Outside of this contingency reserve?
Yes, we don't use it in determining the funded status of the pension plan or in the employer contribution rate. So we just need to hear from you what level you want to keep it at, if any.
I'm in favor of 1%.
I am as well.
Yeah, I am also. So I think that's plenty.
So, Chairman, would you like a motion?
Yes, or? I'm waiting for some direction. So.
Okay, I'll make a motion that we reestablish the contingency reserve of 1%.
And I'll second that.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded. We move the contingency reserve to 1%. Or any further discussion?
Just the point that Rick made, that if it's 1% or less, we don't have discretion over it?
If you set it at 1%, no, you do, but you only have discretion on earnings above 1%. So let's say that you had discretionary earnings, let's say you kept it at 1%, and the next year you had discretionary earnings of, I don't know, $2 million, then you could take that and you could spend it any way you wish. The point is that you have to maintain the reserve at that level before you can spend anything in excess of that level. That makes sense?
At the 90%.
At the 1%.
At the 1%.
I have another question. That
1% is there to offset bad investment experience in the future. So you can't use the 1% to pay ad hoc benefits. So you got to accumulate something in excess of that before you can use that.
So the next move would be if we had a failure that we wanted to try to plug the hole with, we would have a new policy discussion that we want to do away with our contingency reserve.
You could.
We take that 1%, we throw it in the hole.
That's exactly right.
And then we wouldn't have a reserve.
That's
anymore.
Exactly right. And we'll revisit that every 2 years.
Yeah.
So what's to keep that level from going below 1%? Just like the prior policy was set the level
yes.
at 2%.
That's a good question.
And it went down below that.
That's a good question. The fourth part of this agenda item addresses that
okay.
We're going to try to get the board to put this policy on autopilot, and that will mean maintaining it at that level.
Okay. Thank you.
The funding could change depending on the value of the fund.
Right, and it will. Exactly. I don't think we need to make motions on each individual item. Let's just, do you agree?
Correct.
Yeah, and let's just get everything down that we can make one motion at the end.
Okay, I would throw a motion.
Okay, sorry. Okay. Second item, part of this agenda item is we want to define the excess earnings on a market value basis. I spent a lot of time, the old policy has that excess earnings are defined on an actuarial basis, and it's in bold black letters. So I was really on my guard as to why we want to define earnings on an actuarial basis. And I looked at all the old agenda items, and I listened to all the old audio, and I can't for the life of me figure out a reason why we're defining earnings on an actuarial basis. I talked to Darren about it. He said he thinks it's just a holdover from years ago. The problem is that if you define earnings on an actuarial basis, you could have situations where you could earn just under 8%. This is probably a worst-case example. But you could earn just under 8% on an actuarial basis and earn zero on a market value basis. And then if we were over 90% funded, this policy would require me to go back to you and say, what do you want to do with earnings that don't exist? So I just want to clear up that inconsistency and define earnings for this for purposes of this policy on a market value basis. Yes.
Can you give us a brief definition that will define?
Yes. Like there, it's very possible we have a corridor on our actuarial value of assets that has to remain within 20% of the true market value. So you could have an actuarial value of $120 and a market value of $100. And what happens is that obviously you know that actuarial value of assets are there to smooth out the gains and the employer contribution rates when things aren't going so well. So essentially, without getting into the mechanics of the smoothing method, what happens is that when there are market losses, the actuarial value, as long as you're well within that corridor, will allow you to essentially defer 80% of the losses, and so you're going to be able to recognize about 80%, I'm sorry, you defer 20% of the losses and allow you to recognize 80% of what you assumed. And that's how you smooth out the employer contribution rates. And that's why there are times when you could have a lot of actuarial earnings and absolutely no market earnings.
And market earnings is just what that number is at the end of the
whatever it is. That's right. You know, another thing, too, is that this stuff here, when we move money between valuation reserves and non-valuation reserves, this is on an accounting basis. And every entry that we do has nothing to do with actuarial earnings. We transfer all money on a market value basis. So that's another reason why it seems to me a little inconsistent.
Well, I'm okay with the market value.
Anybody else? Does that sound okay?
All right. Yeah.
The next item is we want to also define the system's fund ratio on a market value basis. Since we're asking you to do the excess earnings on a market value basis, we want to be consistent and determine the funded ratio on a market value basis. It's also more consistent with the health of the plan. And what we'll see is, if you remember, the current excess earnings policy has breakpoints as to where you determine whether there are excess earnings or not and how they can be spent. And these breakpoints are based on an actuarial funded ratio. Well, a worst-case scenario exists. Let me back up one second. The first point in time where you could actually spend money, excess earnings, would be if the fund were 90% funded on an actuarial basis currently. A worst case scenario exists where you could be 90% funded on an actuarial basis, and because of the 20% corridor, you could be 75% funded on a market value basis. So we would be asking to do something with earnings when in reality, on a market basis, the fund would only be 75% funded.
So Rick, right now, give us the funded status of our fund under both scenarios.
It's exactly 78.1% for both because of all the returns we had in 2010-11 fully paid back all the losses that were incurred between 2007 and 2009. And they were just a tad off last year, and I don't know if you remember, but Graham just simply reset that actuarial value to where it equaled the market. And so this, actually right now, it's kind of funny. This is the time when you could have this inconsistency.
Without us looking like we increased our debt.
Yeah, if we earn zero, let's say we earn 0% for this fiscal year, the actuarial return this year would be 6.4%, which is about 80% of what we assume. But in reality, we earned zero. So this is probably the best year we could see an inconsistency is when both of those are equal.
Okay, everybody all right with market value?
Are we okay with that?
Okay, number four.
So this is the part of the agenda that we want to simply put the policy on autopilot when the fund system is funded below 90%. Right now, there's a situation. Let me. This is kind of a tough one to explain. Current policy says that the board shall credit interest to all valuation reserves, and it says all in italics and bold. However, last year, the board chose to credit member reserves at 0%. Well, with the good year, the good return we had last year, after we paid expenses and paid off all the past losses, there were still $54 million of undistributed earnings that had to go somewhere. Since the board credited member reserves at 0%, staff put that all the rest of the money into one account. So what you had last year is you had four of the five valuation reserves getting 0% and one that got essentially about 10% on their money. So it wasn't in line with what the current policy said. So we want to clear that issue up. And the way we want to clear that issue up is ask you what you want us to credit the member contribution reserves at when the fund is less than 90% funded, and when that example occurs, if there are earnings in excess of all the expenses, we want to be able to simply spread those excess earnings over all the reserves evenly on a pro rata basis based on size. We're asking you to put it on autopilot. And so what this also means, there's an implication to this as well. What this also means is that in terms of that non-valuation contingency reserve, when there are earnings in excess of expenses, then we will be transferring money from a valuation reserve into that contingency reserve. And when the earnings don't cover expenses, then we would be taking money from a valuation reserve and putting it back into this non-contingency reserve to essentially, I'm sorry, the other way around. When earnings don't cover expenses, we would be taking money from the contingency reserve and sticking it back into the valuation reserves. So those are a couple implications of what we're asking for.
I'm for doing that, Rick. As long as we don't create a situation where we have make-believe earnings going to accounts that people later say that's due us because we were credited 10 years ago.
But if we have that system, that
it won't happen. This will prevent this from happening.
We're going to the market.
Right. So
I won't have to come back to you at all until the fund gets to be 90% or greater on a market value basis. We're just going to continue this thing. But beware that I'm asking you today to tell me what you want to credit the member contribution reserves at if the fund is less than 90%.
Based on what we decide today, can you change what happened last year, or is that a done deal?
I suppose I could. I don't know if I'd really want to.
It would be really ugly. The money went into the pension reserve, I believe it was.
No, it went into the retiree.
The retiree.
Yes.
Okay. And so it's still part of the valuation. It's still part of the full bucket. It didn't hurt anything by putting the lump into one reserve rather than spreading it. But what that was is it was the... Every year it's been sorted out and determined by the administration and with the board. And so we're asking, tell us what to do so our accountant does know what to do so we're not scrambling at the end of the year trying to figure out how we're supposed to do it. So we could undo it. It would be really ugly. And it hurt nothing by putting it all into one reserve because it did go into a valuation reserve.
I don't know if the auditors would have anything. Why change?
Yeah.
Why change the policy?
Because
there's an inconsistency in the policy. The policy now says to credit all valuation reserves. Member reserves are a valuation reserve. So we want to distinguish between member reserve, right.
So how many reserves do we have?
There's five or six valuation reserves.
And why is there a difference?
Well, a good example is retirees. They have a pension and annuity piece. You get two components to your retirement benefit.
Right.
And the annuity piece is based on your member contributions. So those are tracked separately. the active side are the employer contributions and the member contributions, and there's one other valuation reserve. Yeah, it's a small one. What is it?
Ad hoc?
No, that would be a...
Is it
oh, it's a COLA. I'm sorry. It's the COLA.
So yeah. we have employer contribution and the member contribution.
Right.
And then what are you talking about? The retirees or the COLA? And the
no, there's a COLA for the for everybody, yeah. Essentially. And then the retiree bucket has two pieces, annuity and pension. Yeah. And so the annuity bucket is all your own contributions and interest, and the pension piece is the employer's contributions to the retirees.
What's the difference between the member and the actives then?
That's a good question. In this case, I'm sorry, the two are synonymous. When I say member, I'm talking about active here. I'm sorry.
Non-retired.
Good point.
Non-retired.
Non-retired, yes. So do you understand what we're asking here is we just want you to tell us, if you want to do this at all, we're asking you to tell us what that member contribution rate should be when the fund is less than 90%, and just give us the ability to spread any earnings in excess of expenses across all other valuation reserves evenly. And that'll get rid of the problem.
So 54 would have been divided by 5 if we had this in place.
No, it wouldn't be equal weighted because the reserves, right, it's pro rata based on their size. So they'd all get the same return,
okay,
essentially.
That hadn't come out yet. So it's
yes,
like we don't just
sorry.
Divide it by 5, we divide
no.
it by the amount in each account.
Exactly. It's a pro rata. It's weighted based on the size of the account.
And I think that's the appropriate way to do it.
Yeah.
I have a question about this 90%. And we set that prior to last year gains when we were significantly down for the last couple of years, actually. I don't feel as good about 90% today as I did back then. I think we should be looking at 100 or something north of 100, personally, before we start allocating. You know, this is why we're part of the reason we got into this issue of having to take that reserves, because we allocated funds that should have stayed within the vested reserves, and we allocated it out, and then we had to take it back. And if we're at 90%, we'll continue to do the same thing.
Remember one thing, and that's a good point. Remember one thing: even if the fund were to achieve 90%, you don't have to do anything.
Right.
We can still. The only thing is, when the fund does hit 90%, then I'm going to come to you, and I'm going to say, "What do you want to do?"
Right.
The current policy that we're not going to change doesn't make us go and doesn't make you do anything. You still have full discretion on what you want to do. But I understand.
What I think the policy
is not 100%. So
right.
That's just. I think the policy is 3 consecutive years.
I'm sorry.
It has to be
90,
three
it's
consecutive years,
it was
at 100%.
That's right.
And then it's of the everything over the 90, 20. We have an option to
25%.
25%.
Right.
Of 70, that. Of those earnings,
that's
if
right.
if we so choose.
That's right. And 75% goes into a valuation reserve currently.
And now we're at market value.
And Ron said, let's fill the glass up and then start doing it.
And I think the reason we went with 90 is we were so far, that glass was three quarters of the way full, or less. And so we were just trying to get the same number. And I think we're getting closer now, and I think 100% is more appropriate for the long term health. That's my point.
Yeah, you can choose to change that that lower threshold if you desire.
It was my recollection that 90% had to be maintained for a couple of years.
Yeah, three years in a row.
But I still think the 100% should have to be maintained for 3 years.
I'd just like to point out, though, what Ron is saying, there are some other external forces that impact our fund, and that is the county, if they chose to enhance benefits, it's going to impact our fund. And therefore,
that's
current retirees don't get to enjoy in any of the fruits of that excess earnings.
You're right, Michael, but I tell you, in this environment, I don't know, I don't see that happening.
Well,
I
would hope not.
Better than that. I wouldn't bet
on
France
it.
France did.
My guess is Greece probably is right in there.
France did it last week. They lowered retirement dates.
There you go. That's
2 years in France.
That'll get them to the par with the southern countries faster.
Well, I think you ought to go with the banker.
So, I mean, can we take it up to 90 without scheduling a vote, an item, with public notice? I don't know.
Well, you're still going to be voting on this, the final draft next month.
This is so, not the...
Right. This well, just tells me... I just want you to tell me what I need to do, go back and change, and I'll change it and bring it back to the final discussion.
I'm okay with that.
And Fred will review everything that we're talking about.
Okay. Is everybody else okay with throwing that in there?
Yeah.
Okay. The last one is very simple. We need to get rid of this one prior year's excess earnings reserve. It's just a cleanup. Essentially, you already have control over almost all the money in the non-valuation reserves. So this part of the policy has no relevance anymore. Are we okay with removing that?
That's the page 2 of the 210.
I think it's page 3 of the old. Yeah, I think it's page 3 of the old policy.
Page 2 and 3.
It's page 3. It says, here, I'll read it to you.
Let's do it.
It says, any reserves accumulated prior to 7/1/2009 that were generated from previous year's excess earnings remain at the discretion of the retirement board. Well, the only thing that's left is the 23.8 in the contingency reserve, and I think you already have discretion over that anyway. So I just don't see what...
Yeah, take it out.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, maybe I missed it. Did we decide what was going to be done about the contribution spread to the rate?
Good point.
I mean, the thing...
Yeah, it was going to be proportionally.
No, what do you?
Proportionally?
So here's the question. Thanks, Donna. Here's the question then. Since we're choosing 100% as the lower threshold, what do you want, if you want the member active contribution reserves interest crediting rate to be when we're below that level? Do you want to keep it at maintaining at zero? Or do you want me to come back to you every year and say, what do you want to do?
I think until it's
if we don't maintain it at zero, we'll be slower, right? We'll be slower on getting to 100%.
No.
If we maintain zero, then we'll move faster.
No, not necessarily, because all that money is going to be into an evaluation reserve anyway. So it's just a matter.
The excess?
Yeah, it's just a matter of what do you want? Do you want to credit the member reserves at anything? You know, I got to tell you that it doesn't really matter a whole lot unless. If you refund your money as an active member, you don't get the interest crediting on your contributions anyway. The only time that really matters is if you die before you retire, and then if you do retire and you choose an option that allows you to get a return of contributions, if you die early into your retirement, allows you to get a return of contributions, then the interest crediting has some effect. But other than that, the interest crediting on member reserves, there's not a whole lot of benefit to the member. So, you know what, it's not that big a deal.
Jeff, where the inconsistency happened, because the current policy said to credit all reserves the same, okay, up to the actuarial assumed rate of return, which was 8%. When the board chose to just do the members at zero, that threw everything else into a question. So then what do you actually do? So if the board set the limit at 100%, and you could choose to credit all valuation reserves at the pro rata share, all 5 of them, and then the members would actually get a piece of that, and that just goes towards their retirement unless they were to die while they were still working. So we could do a couple ways. We could either separate the member reserve out and leave it at zero or whatever the board chooses, and then do the rest as a pro rata share, or you could do them all because they're still valuation reserves. So yeah, so where the inconsistency happened was when the board pulled the member piece separately out.
But you guys had a little huddle and came back with the recommendation for this issue right here. What would it be?
Well, the reason we put what we put in here is because listening to all that went on in the last 2 years, we got the feeling that this board wanted to keep that crediting rate on member contributions at zero until the fund got to a more healthy state. So that's why we stuck in here what we did. But she's right. If you want to just every year take any earnings in excess of expenses and divvy it up evenly across all evaluation reserves, we actually wouldn't have to change that part of the policy because that's how it exists right now. We could do that. That's definitely something if you want to do that, if you want to go down that path. It's up to you.
Any reason to not do that?
To review it every year?
No, we still wouldn't have to review it.
To just...
If that condition exists, it just disperses.
Evenly.
And you could do that with, and still cap the member at 8% or whatever.
Yeah, we wouldn't go above 8%.
You could say pro rata up to this point, and then that's all the member goes into the member. You don't want to do 22% to the member, but you could do it. There's a couple ways to do it. The kicker is to, for us, is to clarify it so that when we close the books, we don't know what to do with it.
And we could maintain this until the fund reaches 100% or better, and then after that, then we would come back to you and ask if you want to change anything. So it's your pleasure. I see nodding.
Yeah.
So do you want to...
I'm fine with the language
you wrote. What you just said.
What I'm understanding is that we want to take any earnings in excess of expenses and spread them evenly across all valuation reserves, including member reserves. Now, if something happened and the fund took a precipitous drop, and let's say the fund ratio dropped back to 60%, are you going to want to change that policy, or do we want to just continue it?
Well, we can do that. We can change policy.
You can come back and say, let's relook at this again.
So right now, we can set up some parameters that are good housekeeping principles, so that we can just kind of do our work.
Okay.
And then if the world changes miraculously or devilishly one way or the other, we can come back and
then
say,
that's
hey,
what
we
we'll
stop
do.
Doing this. We're going to do that now.
I think it's a good idea. I think what you're deciding is a good idea.
We can make it evergreen, but only evergreen 1 year at a time. so that we can review it, and so we would never be more than 1 year out of correction.
You could, yes. Yeah. Again, though, my goal here is to not bring anything back to you unless there's some really big changes. And if there are, I will. I will bring them back to you. Okay.
I don't really like the idea of making policy based on what's just happened in the last 4 weeks. I think it's better to set a policy that's going to survive ups and downs, and to not have to, you know, be looking at it all the time. I think I'd really rather put it on autopilot and just review it every 2 years without having to, because otherwise I think you get this kind of, for good or bad, halo effect of what's going on right now, and you're making decisions based on really short-term events. I think it's better to do it kind of with a longer-term view.
The only caveat I would have is,
but 2 years is an eternity in this business.
And we have no idea what's going on, both from a legislative standpoint or a world economic standpoint.
Well,
so that would be my only concern.
So if we have above, we're gonna divide it all up equally
amongst all valuation reserves,
including the member.
Including the member.
So you're gonna credit them some amount,
yes,
based on the size of that. And currently, right now, we're not crediting them anything.
Correct. And so the only other issue that would happen, and we could write this in, is that if we had negative earnings, then what we would do is credit all the reserves, including the member reserves, at zero. And then that contra loss account would be the balancing item. And then we would have to go back each year and fill that before we could do anything else.
And everybody, we get the loss the same.
Yes.
Well,
everybody would get zero.
Yeah.
You can't have a negative return on valuation reserves.
Right.
So, okay.
Well, okay, question. Everything you do has a consequence. Sometimes there are unintended consequences. What are the possible unintended consequences of any of these changes we're talking about?
We vetted this very thoroughly, and we tried to rip this thing apart, and it stood the test of our throwing darts at it. I can't sit here and tell you that I've got every contingency covered, but if there's a contingency that rears its head later on, I will
come back.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But right now, I just don't see it. I think it's pretty clean. And it's easy to execute.
And are there any of those things that are going on in the political environment that's likely to impact on any of this?
Not that I know of.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so, but...
No. Okay.
You know, given the vote last Tuesday, who knows what's going on.
Right. Okay, so we are ready to have you vote and send us off to make these changes.
Well, let me recap just so we have it all.
Well, now, let me just throw something out real quick. So we've got, and I don't mean to draw, drag this thing out. Okay. So we've got the COLA portion, we've got the pension portion, the annuity portion, and we've got the member contribution portion and the employer portion. Okay. We have it at zero right now for the members. I think it makes more, these are not savings accounts. This is your retirement account. And the goal is you're going to use this for retirement. Okay? If a person decides to you know, leave employment and cash it out, you know, if you had that money in the bank or in a savings right now, given current policy, you're not even making it based on inflation. You're basically giving the, you know, you're losing money on this. So if the goal here, if the benefit is for you know, you're using this for retirement, the real buckets were this, if there's anything, even now that we've changed it to a market valuation perspective, the real important thing is on the retirement portion, which is what we're all about. It's not to add money to a quasi savings account.
Right.
So I would rather have, you know, if you want to divide it up amongst the other accounts, that's fine. But I think from a prudent standpoint, we should still set the member crediting at zero, and we can review that on an annual basis.
You sure you want to do that? I mean, that's what I heard that we didn't want done, listening to the audio. In fact, that was the impetus of you putting this in here.
Well, we've gone down this road, we've revisited this thing many times, and if you're talking about autopilot, you know, we come back and we say, yeah, keep it at zero. And then a year later, yeah, keep it at zero. So we really haven't changed course on anything.
Right.
And so if we're really going to, the point here is to shore up the retirement system. I mean, I think we should just, if you want to review something, I think that's the portion you ought to review. That's just my input.
Did you not say that when they cash out, they don't get that portion?
That's correct. If an active member refunds, he only gets his.
Yeah, but there are certain examples where they would get that. They would get some of it. They would get the interest.
1/8 of 1%.
Oh, sorry.
If they hadn't drawn everything out during their retirement period before they died.
They just said that they get 1/8 of 1% interest.
They refund prior.
So, which is essentially zero.
Right.
That's
about what you get at the credit union right now.
It does help, though. It does help if you pass, because one of the death benefits is a refund of contributions with interest. So that does help. And then if you pass early on in your retirement, you get a greater portion of your annuity back if you choose that option.
So what's the benefit to crediting the member if we're there?
Zero? At zero?
Yeah. Or at a pro rata portion.
Nothing to the member, nothing other than if you die. Really?
They're going to get that whether we credit or not.
They're going to get their retirement benefit, but they won't get the full contributions with interest unless they die.
And if they retire, it moves into the
right.
Retiree.
Oh, yeah. It just moves over into the retiree bucket, and you can't get it after that. There's not a whole lot of advantage to having a member contribution rate. This 37X system is quite different from where I came from, because they allowed crediting of member contributions at a static 6%. If you retire, you get back everything plus your 6%. So this is quite different. The member contributing rate doesn't have as much significance here.
All right. So we have it down as a discussion and action. Do we need to, we're just making recommendations now for the draft to come back to us, but we need to approve the recommendations.
Well, let me recap and make sure we have what you guys said. You would be, the changes would be reaffirm the intent to maintain a non-valuation contingency reserve at 1%, define excess earnings on a market value basis, define the system's funded ratio on a market value basis, define how earnings are allocated when the system is funded below 100%, spread across all reserves, valuation reserves, and then discontinue the prior year's excess earnings reserve. So that's what the motion and second I would need with those changes.
Okay, but to get back to Darren's point, it's not advantageous for us to allocate to members, then why would we change this policy to do that? Maybe it's just going to create issues down the road. Why wouldn't we?
Wouldn't we just need to change the language to say zero to that one bucket, and then the rest of them all spread equally to just give guidance?
That's what's in here.
Yeah.
It's just as easy either way. If you want to do that or you want to do what Darren said, it's just as easy. We can spread it amongst everybody, or we can credit zero and spread the rest amongst everything else. It's just as easy, whatever way you do it. And there are no implications towards contribution rates or funded status, and the only implication is to the member, and it's a very small thing to the member. It's not that important. I have a feeling if a member were able to refund and get all the interest and contributions, there would probably be somebody here talking about this, you know, if we were going to make this decision to keep it at 0%, but it's just not that important.
And there's no way we can really complicate it?
Based on the two scenarios that you have laid out, Darren and Donna, it's easy. It's still easy. Whatever you want to do.
Well, what's the right way to go?
The right way, based on the way...
From an accounting standpoint, then.
I think that I would make it very simple and credit everything at the same rate. Split up, divvy the earnings across all the reserves at the same rate and be done with it.
Based upon the size of the reserve. All right, that's fine.
Exactly. It's just not that big a deal.
Which is what we agreed on half an hour ago.
If the legislature was trying to make a decision, that's what we want them to do. It would be the simplest.
It wouldn't be that way then.
But we could be a model.
That is the easiest, though. It really is. And the only reason I suggested it is because through my research and history, it seemed like we wanted to keep it at 0%. But we don't have to. There's really no reason to.
Are you clear on what we want you to do?
Yeah, very much so.
Would we cap the member crediting?
Yes, we'll stick that in there.
Okay. This requires a motion.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, motion's made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? And then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Our motion's carried unanimously. Number 6B. Vacant office space.
Okay, Kathy Herman is going to give an update.
Okay.
You're up.
Construction is set to begin on Monday. And they hired a contractor. He's RS Company. He's out of Concord. He specializes in the commercial tenant improvements, and they actually did the Raymond James office in Walnut Creek, so they already know what they're doing and they're ready to go. The county has already approved the plans that affect any common areas or systems. That's all been taken care of. And they're actually going to be start working at 6 o'clock in the morning. And they said 6 to 2:30, but they plan to be in and open for business on August 20th. So in 2 months, they're going to have this built out, furnished, and ready to go. So I'm thinking they're probably going to be working a lot longer hours than 6 to 2:30. But their plan is to try to do the most disruptive and the noisiest part of the work before we all get here. We've already talked to the district attorney's office. They're set up to coordinate because there's going to be some drilling. So we needed to make sure the DA was aware, and we'll have security on ready to go so we can access the areas we need to. The DA is going to work with us on that, no problem. And as far as the lobby on the first floor, we've got the colors been selected for the paint. We've got some signage samples. I've got furniture layout. So it's just everything's moving forward. It doesn't make a lot of sense to do much to the lobby till we know they're not going to be hauling stuff through the lobby. And but we're moving forward on all this, and things should be done by the end of the summer. That's where we're at.
Okay. Verbal report on pre-retirement seminar.
Don Lee, will
you
this?
Okay, we held our annual pre-retirement seminar on May 1st this year. We had 190 people enrolled in this class, and 187 actually attended. And so these were employees and spouses were invited. Out of the 187, though, we only received 80 survey results. People weren't very good about turning them in, but the results that we did get were very good. All of the speakers were rated between good, from good to excellent. People were happy with the seminar. We had had some requests to add Social Security back into the lineup, and so we were able to do that this year. Unfortunately, at the last minute, they switched speakers on us, and the speaker who came was not prepared to answer questions, and so we were a little disappointed with that, but that's something that we're working on for next year. We hope that we will have someone that will be more comfortable with answering questions to our members that are there. We did have an expanded breakout area this year over in the opposite side at Harvest Hall. There were several more tables set up, and so we had people from the health insurance companies, from volunteer organizations. We had Resco and Valley Forge Credit Union, several different tables for people to go to and ask questions and find out additional information in addition to the basics that we were covering in the seminar itself. And people seem to be very happy with the results. So we plan to continue to do this on an annual basis again next year.
Good job.
Good. Okay, that brings us to item 7, members forum. Aaron?
Nothing.
Do you have anything?
On the closed session? Yeah.
Well, okay, member forum. Okay, Joan?
I was reading an article in the Wall Street Journal this morning, and there was a, an article about the pensions in another state, but they mentioned a foundation that studies Gadsby and registers opinions about what Gadsby means and the consequences of it. It was called the John Arnold Foundation, and they have some differing views on Gadsby. I'm wondering if we shouldn't have some more information about Gadsby, what the real effects are.
Do you mean the prospective changes?
Yeah.
We're going to. Graham's going to be here probably, in fact, that's what I'm going to hand out, probably in November, December this year, we're going to discuss this.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Ron? Okay. Michael?
Just wanted to comment on Don. For Don, for next year, Resco has presented in the past. We got shut out the year before last, and I didn't get us in early enough. I mentioned it to Rick, and he said he'd get us on the schedule for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes. And other than that, oh, and Resco is going to be having the state conference in October here in Modesto. And we put on a pretty good conference. At least we did 7 years ago when we did it.
Third Monday?
What's that?
Third Monday.
Third Monday?
What's the date?
The 27th.
Oh, yeah. October. Yeah. Yeah. And we'd like to extend an invitation to the board members to stop in. I'll get some pre-information stuff and bring it to one of the board meetings if you want to stop by and look at one of the seminars or something. It's not quite as posh as Sackers. But the information is just as good. So
this is the CRCEA?
CRCEA.
Donna? Just a question for Rick. Rick, has Research Affiliates sent us the money back?
How much will it be?
It's due on the 15th.
Yep, 15.
How much will it be?
I don't have that answer. It was 15 in in April.
No, it was between 12 and 13. We just asked them that today, and he hasn't gotten back to us yet.
Okay.
Probably would have.
And just to let you know, we're going to take some money out of it and use it for cash flow purposes. And then at the investment meeting at the end of this month, we're going to ask you what you want to do with it, with the rest of it.
Okay. I have one thing. I just want to get a definitive answer on that death benefit.
Okay.
Just is it? My question is it a vested benefit or an ad hoc? I just want to, because we've heard it both ways, okay. And nobody really knows for sure. I think it's best
and the consequences of whatever it is.
Okay.
Really fast, we don't have to discuss this. Gordon asked me to give you an itinerary of the asset allocation study and experience study. So this is a breakdown, a rough breakdown of how we're going to approach this and some deadlines. Just for your information.
That's it. Okay, that's it. Now we have a closed session.
Make a motion to move into closed session.
Okay, motion is made. The second that we go into closed session, those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay, we will move into closed session momentarily.